Hello, and welcome to the Art of Intuition podcast. My name is Susan Jane, and I believe that trusting your intuition is the best way to live your life with meaning and purpose. Each week you will hear about how you can connect, develop, and trust your intuition through interviews with other guests and my own personal experiences. Join me to understand how your intuition can guide you towards a life full of meaning and loving purpose. Hello and welcome to the Voice of Intuition podcast. I'm Susan Jane, your host for the podcast, and today we have got someone really exciting. Now, Ryan, I shouldn't tell you all yet. Oh, yes, I'll tell you. Ryan actually has this really good understanding about the choices that we make and the way we go in life, as in, do we want to actually live a life or are we just surviving to die? And I know that sounds a little bit horrendous, but it isn't. It's a terrific story. Wait until you hear all about Ryan's experiences and what he went through to get that understanding about living and living to live and living to die, because there's certainly a big difference in it, and we're going to get all that today. But first of all, like, subscribe, share the podcast, let your friends know so they too can get all this understanding and this information about how they can learn to trust their intuition. But with no further ado, I do want to introduce you to Ryan, because this is going to be really cool. I'm so looking forward to it. Okay. Hi, Ryan. How are you going?
Hi. I'm doing fantastic. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, we're excited to have you on board. You have got an amazing story. Like, it's down in the description, but it's about you had two unexplained cardiac arrests. Now, but before we get there, hang on, because we're gonna share all of this. What I want to know is a little bit about you and how you actually got to where you are now. And if that's part of the story, go ahead and share it. I'd love to get this understanding, because you don't look very old either, I can assure you.
Well, that's good. I'll take it. But I've been a coach for many years, a little less than 20 years or so. But I've worked in wellness for a lot longer than that. I am an introvert, very, very introverted. I suffered from really bad anxiety as a kid. I think it was viewed differently then. Now I think there's a lot more avenues you can go to get help or assistance with that. But I think back then I was viewed as just the quiet guy, maybe quirky or what have you, but suffered from really bad anxiety. And I gravitated towards personal development, and really it drew me into the helping profession. So coaching, wellness. And I didn't actually know being a coach was a possibility. I never knew it was a career option. So I couldn't say that I had always wanted to be a coach, because I never knew that was even an option. But I was drawn to the helping profession, and it really stemmed from just looking for answers for myself, ways to help myself, and in that wanting to help others as well. So I eventually, after many years of struggle and really trying different ways and trying to find a way that something that fit, I found what I would call at the time my dream job. So I was under a real big coaching contract, and I was there. I'd done a little coaching prior, but nothing more freelance. And I got this big contract, and I was there maybe a month or two. So I had no company health insurance, no paid time off. And I was just walking along one day, and I just dropped dead right there as my first cardiac arrest. Now, I had two cardiac arrests, but they were a day apart. So kind of the same situation, but the following day. And I I knew it was going to happen actually like a few seconds prior. Like I knew my vision started to change. I had a few seconds and I knew I was going to lose consciousness. I knew that. I didn't think beyond my wildest dreams that I was going to have a cardiac arrest, but I knew that I was going to lose consciousness. And I turned to the woman beside me and I just told her, I said, I'm going down now. So I knew that's exactly what I said. And I knew it was going to happen, I would say 5 seconds. Cause you know, my vision started to close in. And I knew it. I woke up, I was in the ER. I had people frantic around me. A doctor was yelling at a nurse and it was just frantic. And, you know, I didn't quite know what had happened to me, but so I had my cardiac arrest and, you know, I had no family history. As I mentioned, I've been in wellness for many years. So non-smoker, slept well, you know, I was a vegetarian for years as well. So it was just a random freak thing. No real signs. And it's been kind of a mystery over the years. I've never learned the root cause of it. I've seen world-renowned specialists. And for the next 10 to 15 years, you know, I was 30 when I was 30 when it happened. So pretty young. And I'm a little older than
that. That is young. Yeah. That is young to experience something like that, especially when there was no, evidence to say that that's where you were going. That is really young.
None. I even worked out that day, went to the gym, exercised regularly. I was a collegiate athlete. Yeah, that 30, you know, it's something you never guess. And I've, over the next decade or so, I'm hopefully I look younger than I am, but it was really, I never got an answer. I do have a pacemaker now, so that's sort of my safety net. But it's not the cardiac arrest, really. It's the years afterwards. I'm dizzy basically 24 hours a day. And I've seen people travel, and they're on waiting lists for a year to see these doctors. And I've seen this renowned like dizziness doctor. And the closest I can figure out is I have electrical problems. I have electrical brain communicating to the heart. But one thing that, and it really impacted my coaching too, in that I have to have boundaries in my life because if I don't, I get sick. So let me explain that a little. So if I don't have boundaries and I push it, in other words, I don't prioritize self-care, I don't get a right amount of sleep, I then start having really bad symptoms like heart palpitations. I start getting lightheaded and clammy. And when I do pass out, it just so happens that my heart stops. Well, I have the pacemaker now, but I still have what I call an episode where I feel it's debilitating. It's absolutely debilitating. And I do have PTSD from it as well. So it's terrifying. I remember being in an airport once and I was having an episode and the terror of it. I almost wanted to just find a room or somewhere I could go to just like curl up. And, I just thought, oh my God, it's happening again. And it just sort of replays. But for years, especially because of the dizziness and having the real low blood pressure and, you know, I'm all kinds of medications, I never knew if I was coming or going, you know, I never knew if I was getting ready to keel over. And I would be in sessions with clients and I'd be hooked up to all these wires. They were virtual sessions at the time. So I was back at work 5 days later after my cardiac arrest, because I need the money. I didn't have any paid time off. I couldn't just take, you know, and I'd be in these sessions hooked to these wires. And I remember listening to a client, and I specialize actually in transitions. So I've worked with thousands of clients, and over the years, I've worked with thousands of clients, really big contracts, and I work for organizations now. So I actually retrain organizations and help shift their culture. But it going through that, it was like night and day in terms of how it shifted the client interaction. Because I remember that one lady, and she was going on about some problems which were real for her. But I remember thinking to myself, because I was just trying to be conscious. All I could think of was like, just stay conscious. Like when you're in the ICU, when you're in the hospital, you're not thinking about all the little problems you have. It just doesn't occur to you. You know, it doesn't, you don't think about that because you're, and I work, ironically, I've worked with clients over the years, have those boundaries. That's, you know, I help them with big life changes. That's what I do. So the irony is that that would happen to me. And now, and that was what I did as for a living also. But when you ask people about their life priorities, most people will give you an answer. They'll and they think they know, right? It's, oh yeah, my family's a priority. My, you know, this and that. And they'll give you a list. But very few people actually reflect it in their daily life. And this is really what I do, is I help people look at their blind spots. You know, I've had psychologists as clients and military leaders and CEOs. And one thing I learned is that no matter how smart you are, no matter, even if, you know, even as a psychologist, as a client, I realized that no matter how smart you are, you can't always see yourself. You can't see your habits. You can't see your blind spots. And my job is to ask the right questions so that people can make that shift. But having that perspective really, I mean, I think about it every day, not in a bad way, but it's, I think about it every day. You know, I have to, you know.
Can I just ask you, Ryan, sure. When you were saying that, you were saying that that people feel that they know what their priorities are, but they don't reflect it on a daily basis. Can you just dig down a little bit on that? What does that mean when you're saying that they don't reflect it on a daily basis, if that's their priorities?
I think most people, they live on a to-do list and they're overwhelmed. And I would be working with a client and I could see a solution for them right in front of them. They would describe their situation, which is usually, oh, my life is stressful. I have long hours of work and I have kids and I'm stressed and all that. Mm-hmm. I could see a solution, but they couldn't, because again, yeah, we can't see ourselves. So what happens when you give some, well, I can see a solution, let me give you 20 suggestions. They will often give you 20 reasons why those 20 suggestions won't work for them.
Yes.
And so I found that out to be very true. And so my job is really to help them with the exploring part of it and ask those questions, because you can never convince anyone of anything. You can't, I mean, I can try, I can influence them, but really people have to choose things, you know, on their own. And
so, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. No. So when you're saying that they're not looking at that, or they're not reflecting it on a daily basis, what are the signs? What is it that we could turn around and go, well, maybe I'm not doing that. You know, maybe I'm not reflecting it properly. Maybe I'm not seeing my blind spot. Like what is it? What does that look like? So I guess why I'm asking this question, Ryan, is so people get an understanding of what they're doing and what that looks like as far as not reflecting it or not seeing that area. Does that make sense to you?
It does. And I think if people ask the question to themselves that you just posed, which is, how can I see this in myself? They've already started to break that, right? And yes. The most common thread that people have who aren't reflecting it is they're not conscious of it. They're not self-aware of it. You don't have to be perfect with it. You just have to look at it from outside almost and say, how am I living? How am I reflecting it? And often what takes to get out of that, there's a lot of self-help out there. I mean, there's all kinds of books. Some are good and some aren't, but I would say it requires a mental shift that requires most people to really look at their habits and undo those. Now, it does take a little time.
Yes.
It's not going to, people are kind of, often they ask me and they are looking for like a switch they can flip and it changes the next day. But I think a good place to start is just being aware of it. And if you can just do that every day and just say, oh, be aware of your mental noise, be aware of the chatter, you will be ahead of most people in terms of making progress there. Just having an awareness of it, I would say.
So what was your turning point? Like you sort of discovered that you weren't really living. You were just surviving basically to die, to pass over. What was your turning point that made you go, okay, I've got to look at this differently? What was your seeing as, as you've reflected, how did you see it? What was that turning point like?
I actually wouldn't say it was just the cardiac arrest. I mean, I had so many years of struggle prior to that, where it was just like you said, surviving. And I was always drawn to that personal development anyway. I couldn't really say the cardiac arrest was like, even though it makes sense that it would be the catalyst, it wasn't just that. But I think what's really made the difference for me is my dizziness is like a reminder for me every single day, because I have to prioritize my own energy. And if we look at our lives are really a string of many little micro decisions every day that we make about, and I look at life like, this is a weird comparison to make, like poker almost. So in other words, every single thing in my life that I do, I am essentially saying it is worth this many poker chips. It's worth this amount of time. It's worth this amount of energy. And I have to think of it like that. Like if I put my energy or time into something, I am saying consciously, yes, that is worth it. Because I view time as such a precious commodity. And I am constantly aware of it. And I think most people do not come to real reflection until a trauma occurs. In other words, they got in a car accident and suddenly they're like, whoa, I've got to look at my life and reevaluate. That was close. Now it doesn't have to take a trauma. But what trauma does is it pulls people into the moment. It pulls people into moments because then they're looking at their lives more holistically, and they are looking at their mortality. They're looking at purpose and what it has meaning in their lives. And they're not on that autopilot that they're normally on.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with you. We sort of get up in the morning, think I've got to do this, got to do this, got to do this. And you just sort of go into autopilot. Yeah. And one of the things that I do, I like how you've explained it in the terminology in that way, it's worth to you, what it's worth to you and what you're using it. And I mean, if somebody turned around and said, well, okay, it's, you know, money, or it's, you know, put it into a context that makes sense to them, then they can start to get an understanding if they're prepared to hand over that. Because that's what you're doing. You're handing over your time. And we're only here on earth for a certain amount of time. So, and because you've had that such a big shock at such an early age, it sort of starts to really make sense to you. But even trauma, when you're talking about the trauma, even losing a loved one, losing a family member, a lot of that sort of brings up that sort of aspect. And even though that it's not so much of a trauma losing them as much as you start to, or even if it's not a family member, you've lost somebody that, you know, you respect or you know, you start to reflect that back on you and you start to sort of look at how your life is. And if you dropped off the perch, you know, that day, the next day, how things are going for you and what they're doing. So I really get the understanding of the trauma. But sometimes it's not the trauma, and like what you said with your heart attack, with your cardiac arrest, it wasn't that created it. It was more about this long-term issue with the dizziness that created it and how debilitating that is. Nobody sees that. If you turned around and said, oh, yes, I had a cardiac arrest and that changed my whole life, it actually didn't. It was this debilitating dizziness that nobody sees, nobody knows about, and unless they're experiencing it, no one understands the feeling of it. That's what's actually changing your life and making you go further forward and move forward. Yeah. And that's amazing. That must be so hard to live with.
Yeah, you made some great points there. And studies show that I would say I think it's about 6 months or so after a trauma like that, a lot of people tend to go back to the familiarity, you know, the habits. So they're pulled into the moment, right? And then they, over time, they get that false sense of comfort where it's like, okay, things are back to normal. I'm busy. I have work. And you get up and you sort of get lost in the autopilot. Mm. For me, it was the ongoing reminder of I have to manage. And the struggle with that is, especially professionally, is when you don't look sick.
Yes.
Then, yeah, people have certain thoughts about, and I've learned that's the key with boundaries. And this is, you know, I work with a lot of people who are overextended in their lives and they feel like they can't say no, especially, you know, if it's they're wanting to help, you know, other people, family members, they take on too much. But I always say you can help other people more if you are your best self. You will have more energy and your time will be more meaningful when you, but I think it was a lesson for me in accepting other people's opinions, separating from it, detaching from it a little, and saying, giving other people permission not to like it. You know, I grew up, I was a people pleaser. I felt like that's where my value came from. I felt like that's where my self-worth came from. It was validation from other people. It was, I cared way too much about what people thought, way too much. And that takes mental space as well and energy. And yes, that is not worth it. That is not worth my energy anymore. I don't have time to worry like I did because I grew up that chronic worrier, the anxiety. I don't have time for that. I don't have time to worry. I don't have time to worry about what people think, certainly. Because if I do, that takes, you know, I then I end up getting myself sick or going down that path again. So, you know, part of having boundaries is really accepting and giving other people permission not to like it or to have their view of it. And that's okay. But you have to be true to yourself and it's your life, you know, it's your life.
Well, and I think you're very, very right in the fact that a lot of people that are more introverted are very, very giving, and they do want to be people pleasers. And I mean, I don't mean to say this is generic across the board, but it is a big part of being an introvert. Because I was doing the same. I was always a people pleaser. And you please people, and it costs you, you know, it costs you your time and your energy and everything else. And you don't mind doing that to a certain degree until it starts to become, like you say, unbalanced, and you start going there. So I love the idea about putting those boundaries up. But the first thing I want to say before I go any further is Ryan's website. Now, it's going on the little ticker tape for the video, but it's not there for the podcast. So Ryan's website is rslindner, isn't it, .com. So rslindner.com. So RS obviously is your first Ryan and your middle name. So you'll find that on there. But so have a look on the website. But first of all, I wanted to ask you, now it sounds like, now I don't know if this is correct or not, but it sounds like your first understanding, the first way you started to move forward was to create those boundaries, was to start to look at the boundaries and where the wheels were starting to wobble for you, and create some boundaries to help you get through. Was that the sort of the first step where you looked at, Ryan?
I would say yes. That was the most immediate need, because I was the only thing I could think about was how to prevent another episode, which for me involved at the time large amounts of sleep. I did find that was one of the few things that I found that actually helped to some degree, not a lot, but I was looking for anything that would help. Cause you know, I've been at work and I've been carted out by paramedics before. And I've been in all kinds of scary situations afterwards. So sleep helped, but yeah, I think, yeah, those boundaries, being honest with people about what I needed and what I could and couldn't do, like I never had. And yeah, absolutely. I think the boundaries were the first immediate need. I think long-term mentally, I had to come to grips with my identity and my self-worth and where that came from. And I learned quickly that, and I help people and organizations really with this, is we're people, not roles. And what I mean by that is, you know, a lot of companies hire roles, not people. And that's why turnover is so high. And that's one thing I track and retrain them on. But I always thought I was a role. And we talked about, you know, being a people pleaser. And I felt like that's where my self-worth was. If I'm not doing things for other people and sometimes getting taken advantage of in that way as you know, when I was younger, I didn't feel like my worth was something that I just had as who I was. I was never enough. And I think as an introvert, just being quiet and anxiety, it was all part of the low self-esteem and all. And when I had my cardiac arrest, I found I couldn't do as much as I had been doing. I had to scale back, which some people didn't like. I had to be honest if I couldn't do something, which some people didn't like. I had to turn down, you know, invitations to things. There were some things that were really important to me that I couldn't do anymore, that had been part of my identity. And I had to realize that being yourself is something you allow. It's nothing you can find or chase or and I feel like with it, I've done thousands of sessions, and most people are in that chasing, like if I do this or I get this accolade or award or job or amount of money or house or partner or whatever, suddenly at that point they will be enough. And they don't realize consciously they're chasing it.
Yes. Yeah.
But for me, I realized, because I had to, right, is I ask myself why in every situation. You know, why am I doing that? Is it worth it? You know, because the cost of a thing is how much life it takes from you. That's the, and everything has a cost. The cost of a thing is how much life it takes from you. So with everything I do, I say, okay, why is that? Am I doing that for an ego reason? Am I doing that? Is that worth the time? Because there is a cost there. And so is it my old habits where I feel like that's how I earn my worth? Because I don't have to earn my worth. I'm just, it's there already. It's everything I do should be an extension of who I am, not something I have to earn to like be enough.
Okay. So we're looking at, you've sort of set your boundaries and that's what's giving you the understanding. And then you've gone, okay, so, and I get where you're saying when you start to put those boundaries up, there's a lot of people that don't like it. I couldn't be around people that were really negative. I just couldn't handle those sort of people any longer. And so there was friends that sort of I had to basically let go. And they don't necessarily like it. If somebody wants to sit there and whinge and bitch about everything and they've got a shoulder that they can whinge and bitch about on, they don't like it when that shoulder's taken away because it doesn't make them feel important. So yes, you do. You do. You go through this transition once you start to put these boundaries up. Now you're putting them up because it was a health situation where you needed to. And I mean, in all honesty, mine was a health situation, but it was a mental health situation. I needed to find Manny. I needed to discover me like you needed to discover you and not look externally, but to look internally. And the only way you can do that is to put up some protection. And when you're talking about protecting your energy and your time, that's what these boundaries are all about, aren't they? They're all about giving yourself. And even though you needed it to start with to help you sleep and get through your illnesses in that context, other people need it just to get away from the negative social media or crap that's happening in the world. So putting up these boundaries. It's also about putting up boundaries on social media, putting up boundaries on watching the news, putting up boundaries on people and groups that you're hanging out with that maybe aren't really what you need to do. And they may be sucking your energy out instead of allowing you to grow and blossom. So those boundaries are huge. They are really, really important. So I really like how you did that. It's really
right,
cool.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So then we're sort of looking at that. So then you've created these boundaries, and now you can then start to prioritize your own time and your own, protecting your own energy. How did you start to look at doing that?
I had to make some tough choices. You're right. You made a lot of good points there. And I think sometimes we have to remove a toxicity. It could be, and I lost some relationships. And I learned really quick by who visited me in the hospital, who checked on me. You learn things in different situations. And I learned,
And I just want to step in there too, because I want to reiterate with people that when you're learning that, you're not judging them, you're just getting an understanding. Because I can see people sort of going, oh, you judge them because they didn't come and visit you. No, that's not what it's about. It's about them spending their time as you were spending your time with them. So it's not a judgment. It's just a learning for you, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for bringing that up. And the relationships, and to go a step further, the relationships that maybe I lost, it wasn't a judgment thing or anything that was even, it was just their way of being did not align with where I was at anymore. You know, some relationships that you have, and again, you're absolutely right. And it's not a judgment thing. It is just that, we're all on different paths, and that relationship, if it is a toxicity, it was just a natural thing that happened. So absolutely. But
Yeah, it just naturally occurs, doesn't it, when it's not when it's not sitting right. Yeah, you just don't have that interaction like you did. I was I was meeting with a group of three other ladies. There was four of us getting together, and we were all building up our business and trying to. We were bouncing ideas off of each other, and it was going along really nicely. And then the whole dynamic started to change, and I started to sort of look at it and sort of go, well, are these people who the people I need to be with? And one of the signs that I had, or one of the signs or symptoms, whatever you want to call them, I would get back, we'd have a two-hour meeting, I would get back into my car, and I would often be in tears by the time I got back to my car. I felt so exhausted and so drained after being with these ladies, and it was like, there's something wrong there. That's not how I'm supposed to feel, because these ladies had some terrific ideas about business, and we were, you know, it was a lovely environment to be with, and yet every time I left it, I would be a mess. I would be in tears. I'd feel exhausted. I couldn't cope with the rest of the day. And that was when I went, you know, I'm not blaming them. I'm just saying the connection that we had wasn't working, and so I had to step away from that. That's really interesting, because like you said, it's not you're not judging them, you're just getting an understanding that you're judging yourself. You're sort of going, hey, that doesn't feel right, I just can't do that anymore.
You're looking within more so than looking without. It's a different way of it's just a different mindset, that's all. And and you also mentioned, like, and I agree, like, it's not just the relationships, it's social media, it's the news, and it's all those things. And I ask myself the why, what is this adding? Often if something doesn't add, it takes away. And so you have to really look at your habits. And again, it's not about getting it perfect, but I think just being aware of it's a good place to start. And I think the biggest thing when I mentioned tough choices, you know, most people have developed these habits for many years. So for me, I had to get out of my comfort zone. I had to, and a lot of my clients, sometimes really making a real change in your life requires you to make choices that are sometimes uncomfortable. They're out of your comfort zone. They're not familiar, and people do gravitate towards the familiarity. So it's venturing into the unknown and sometimes making those big choices. Because I mentioned earlier, your whole circumstance often is shaped by all these little micro decisions you make every day. And sometimes you don't make the best decisions for yourself. It's not a conscious thing.
Yes.
But once you make it conscious and you make better little micro decisions, and maybe you open your mind to, okay, maybe this role or this job is toxic for me. Maybe the situation where I live is toxic. Maybe it requires that you make a shift that's more aligned, you know, and allows you to have those boundaries and allows you to live in a more, I guess, peaceful state.
Yeah, that's lovely. Sorry, I had another thing I wanted to ask you and I can't remember what it was. So when we're looking about it was the monkey chatter. It was the internal dialogue that we go through. That's where I wanted to go next, because I know we're getting a bit low on time. How do we combat this? Because you're saying that we make micro decisions all day, all the time. And yes, absolutely, we do. And that's where I jump into, well, you've got to trust your intuition because you're making decisions. But I'm not going to go there yet. When we get this monkey chatter coming in, or this self-dialogue, how are we, because that would be your next step. You've put boundaries up. You're starting to create space and time for yourself. How do we combat with this dialogue when it's saying, oh, well, you really should be looking after them, or you really should be doing that, or, and I hate the word should, and I never use the word should, but I'm trying to get a point across. How do we control that? How can we start living instead of just, you know, surviving until we pass?
I think that's a good place to start is what you're describing. And I look at self-help out there and most of it treats symptoms and not causes. So you take a hoarder, for example, and I can help a hoarder get organized. I can go clean their house. I can give them all kinds of organizational books. And they're probably going to hoard again in a week because we didn't treat the root cause, which is in their minds. It's their own internal, way of being. So it's their outlook, their kind of the way they're wired with their habits. And the awareness is somewhere to start. So, it's going to take a long time. Like I said, it's not going to be a light switch you can turn on and off. And, there are things I'm going through that I'm still working on. It's not like I have it all figured out or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But what I've learned to do is I take my own dialogue, the noise, with a grain of salt. So I understand it more. So if I know my own tendencies mentally, and like worrying, for example, was always a natural tendency for me. And I would now I catch it. That's the difference. It's not like I don't have the internal dialogue, because I do, and it's still a struggle sometimes, to be honest. But I catch it. I'm like, there I go again. And I ask myself, I kind of coach myself in my own head. What do I actually know about the situation? Let me give you an example of something that would be automatic for people just real quick. So yeah, that is a time waster. So someone cuts you off in traffic and you're upset and you honk your horn and you're upset. Most people would be in their head for a while out of anger for quite a while. Usually, I'm so irritated. This person, they cut me off in traffic and, oh my God, they don't know how to drive. They go on this mental rant, right? Like, oh, that person can't drive. It kind of throws their day off right then. And they honk the horn, even sometimes when it makes no difference. Now, what you could do is say, well, how am I helping the situation now? What control over it do I have now? And what do I actually know about the situation? Now, would it change your outlook of the situation to know that this person was driving his pregnant wife to the hospital who's giving birth in the car? Would that change your view of them cutting you off? What do you actually know to be true? Because we live in assumptions, right? So when I'm worrying about something and I'm working with clients to stop worrying, most of the time, I would say 9 times out of 10, what they're worried about does not happen in the way, it does not unfold in the way that they think it will. Yes, most people live in worst case scenarios, right? And then on top of that, like with the person cutting you off in traffic, was that worth the energy that you gave to it? No, it wasn't. And let's say this person made a mistake. Maybe they just made a mistake. Okay. Let's even go a step further. Maybe they're not sorry at all. Maybe they're jerks. Maybe they're not good people, whatever. But, you being upset, it's not going to make them sorry. It's not going to change what happened. If you yell at them, what do you expect is going to happen? They're going to go, oh, I'm so sorry. But most of the time, no. But it's not worth the energy that you gave it in most times. And that's the case with most worrying. It's not, what do you actually know about a situation? Mostly very little. It's your mind going on and living in worst case scenarios, which it often does. So I ask myself that. I ask myself, is this worth it? Most of the time, we don't want to live in uncertainty. So we just worry and anxiety about this uncertainty. But you have to trust yourself that you will respond in a situation appropriately. And you have to learn to let go. So I think for me, it's just being aware of it, aware of what's going on, asking myself the right questions, going, what do I know? Am I assuming things? And I almost laugh sometimes. It's like, well, there I go again. I'm going on some kind of mental tangent. Let me pull myself back. And eventually you will learn to pull yourself back every time. It'll take some, it'll take practice, but you will learn to, it will become a habit, a positive habit to say, there I go again. Let me pull myself back.
Yes, absolutely. I totally agree with you. And it was funny because just on the weekend, that happened to me. Somebody pulled over into my lane. And I remember I bit the horn and went, oh my God, that scared me. but then I sort of let it go because I knew that, well, I don't know whether they saw me or not, but I believe in my mind that they just didn't see me. They weren't aware of it. They didn't do it deliberately. They just weren't aware of it. And of course I just brushed it off and I went, well, scared me, probably scared him just as much, you know, because all of a sudden he's gone, whoa, back in. So yeah, you do. If you can let it go without holding on to it, then it's not going to affect you. You're not using your energy and time up for something that's negative and you don't really need to go there. So yeah, I like how you explained that. But that's it, awareness, isn't it? It really is awareness. Yep. And if we can pull ourselves up early, we're going to certainly get through it a lot quicker and a lot easier. But before I go, because we're just about out of time, I just want to mention that Ryan has got a book out and it's called The Half-Known Life by Ryan Lidner. And now I would imagine, Ryan, that this was about your experiences. I'm only guessing because I haven't read the book. Sorry.
It is. It's got that in it. And most people, when they sell The Half-Known Life, it's like about, you know, the cardiac arrest and life is short and all that. It's actually a step further. It actually comes from a quote from Moby Dick, the book. And it's really, The Half-Known Life is really the inability for us to see ourselves. And so it's really about, we can't see ourselves kind of thing, and exploring what that means and helping people out of that. So that's really what it's about.
Wow. Okay. So we get to learn the other side of us. Yeah. Oh, I really like that. But we are out of time, Ryan. Thank you so much for being on the show. Any last comments before we go?
I would just say thank you so much for having me. And the last comment, I guess, is the cost of a thing is how much life it takes from you. So just remember that. Yeah. But thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And that's very, very true. Okay, stay on the line. I've got to chat with you in a minute. I am just going to press the right buttons. Yes, I pressed the right buttons. Yay. That is the cost of it. Is it worth it? If getting angry and yelling and all that sort of stuff, is it worth it? Is it worth it, the damage that it does to you emotionally, spiritually, physically, all in all those areas, you know? Be mindful of that. But grab Ryan's book, The Half-Known Life. You can get it on his website, which is rslindner.com. That's it from this week. As I said before, subscribe, like, share the podcast, and we will be up next week. That's it. That's all for me. I'm trying. There's something else I need to say and I can't. It's not coming to me. I'm probably watching the clock and getting concerned about the time. But if it comes to me, I'll let you know. All right, guys, have a great week and I will see you. Oops, hang on, press the right buttons. I will see you next week. Okay, bye for now.